you men and women of the United Nations, we present a special musical program with Lee Sweetland, Victor Young and his orchestra, and the King's Men with the Ken Darby Chorus. Also present is that interesting storyteller, John Nesbitt.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gain Whitman. Mr. Sweetland's opening song is The Beautiful Impatience by Franz Schubert.
I carve it on the bark of every tree. On every stone it should engraven be. I fain would sow it in each garden green. In early grass it should be quickly seen. On every page should be inscribed forever. Thine is my heart. Thine is my heart. And shall be thine forever. Young and tender starling dear, and he should speak those words in tone so clear, as if my lips had said that tender word, whose echo in my ardent heart is heard, and he should sing it out of my window ever. Thine is my heart, thine is my heart, and shall be thine forever. Love to thee should blow, and through the hedgerow should its sign flow. I'd have it shine in every flower star, and perfumery should waft it near and far. The stream should move the wheels to tell it ever. Thine is my heart, thine is my heart, and shall be thine forever.
Here's Victor Young's arrangement of The Most Beautiful Girl in the World. Thank you. At this spot in the program, John Charles Thomas always tried to select an old favorite to sing for you. Well, in his absence, Lee Sweetland has a song that certainly comes within that category. Your Eyes Have Told Me So.
I know my lips have never met your lips in sweet caress. Your hand has never touched my hand with thrilling tenderness. You never spoke of love to me, and still somehow I know your love has made me wondrous wise. Your eyes have told me so. I saw your eyes, your wonderful eyes, with love, light, and tenderness beaming. They thrilled me through, they filled me too, with wonderful dreams I am dreaming. No need to speak, no more shall I see. For my heart has taught me their meaning, and love has turned at last. I know your eyes have told me so.
Some time ago on this program, we gave what we believe was the first radio presentation of an old forgotten song. It's a great song by a great composer, James Bland, who wrote, among others, Carry Me Back to Old Virginia and In the Evening by the Moonlight. Today, the King's Men, America's foremost quartet, are going to sing it again. The song, Way Up Yonder.
Soon this sinner will be going
way up yonder.
This heart is overflowing.
I will meet you there.
Tell them I am a feeling splendid
way up yonder.
All my golden shoes are mended.
I will meet you there.
Mountain
away,
way up yonder,
right beside old garden's fountains, she will meet you there. Way up yonder.
Tell all the people that I'm going away.
This brings us to another of the highlights, which is the weekly visit from John Nesbitt, our teller of tales. Once again, he has taken the sea as the source of a true adventure from The Passing Parade. John Nesbitt.
On the 14th day of August in 1834, a sailing ship called the Pilgrim braced to yards, heaved up her anchor, and sailed out of Boston Harbor for California. She was a little ship, so small that she could have been floated in a modern swimming pool. And yet, to this hour, every American sailor's family at home can thank God for that tiny ship. For on it were three common sailors whose friendship made the Pilgrim the milestone in the history of the sea. There was Sam, who was a big, stoop-shouldered Kansan. And there was John, a huge Swede sailor who could hardly talk English. And finally, Richard. A sickly, dark-eyed boy of just 19. His father had taken him out of school at Harvard and sent him to sea in the hope that it would make a man out of him. But from the first day, the boy was so dreadfully seasick that he could hardly stand. And so Sam, the Kansas man, and John, the Swede, decided to look after the kid and treat him as a kind of younger brother. This boy and his two older friends lived with the rest of the crew in a black pit in the forward part of that vessel called the forecastle. In bad weather, the single hatch was closed, and not a breath of air or a ray of light penetrated to the dungeon.
In that tiny wooden cave, about the size of your bathroom, 11 grown men slept and ate for 4 years. For weeks at a time, beds and clothing were drenched with water that leaked in through the deck. Men slept in wet beds, crawling out after their 4 hours of rest and pulling on wet clothing. Going around the horn, it sometimes became so cold that this clothing was actually frozen stiff. For food, these men had tea sweetened with molasses and ship's biscuit so hard that it had to be broken with a hammer and usually filled with weevils, and salt pork, which was so salty that it was actually improved by being washed out in the sea. For dessert, they had duff, which was a flour paste rolled in a ball and boiled in water and sweetened with molasses. But this was such a special luxury that it was served only on Sundays and Christmas. This was their food not for just a season, but for 4 interminable years, during which time they couldn't quit their job at all. For no matter how much the sickly boy or the others hated the ship, there was nothing in the world that they could do about it, for they were all prisoners. At this time, American seamen, in order to get a job, were forced to sign a sheet of paper, and once their names were down, they had to go to whatever ship they were sent to, no matter how unseaworthy it might be or how cruel the captain might be. At San Pedro, California, the former farmer from Kansas, Sam, forgot himself, and nearly dropping with fatigue, he spoke back to the captain. He was seized by the mate, his wrists lashed, the shirt torn off his back, and the captain took a length of heavy hemp rope with a knot in the end, gripped it in both hands, bent forward to brace himself, swung the rope around his head and brought it down across the man's bare back 7, 8, and 9 times. Sea captains in the 19th century sometimes boasted together of their skill and strength in flogging their men. And John the Swede, watching the beating, said timidly to the captain, "What are you flogging him for, sir?" And the captain whirled, "Seize that man, strip off his shirt. If you want to know what I flog him for, I'll tell you. It's because I like it and it suits me, and that's what I'm going to do it to you for." No man protested. No one dared. To have done so would have been punishable by death. But that sickly boy from Harvard lowered his eyes. "I vow to God, if he ever gives me the means, that I will do something to relieve the sufferings of these wretched human beings." And weak and frail though the boy was, his slender hands had a power in them, because they could take up a pen and write words that men wouldn't forget. The 19-year-old's name was Richard Henry Dana, and the words he wrote were a book that you may know, 2 years before the mast. And the scene in that book of the flogging of Sam and John moved hundreds of thousands of people to wrath against the cruelties that seamen had endured for centuries. And in Congress, bills were passed prohibiting the flogging of seamen, giving him compensation if injured, guaranteeing him good food, comfortable quarters, and justice, no matter where his ship sailed. And in England, a man named Samuel Plimsoll put through a bill in Parliament to keep overloaded ships from putting out to sea, so that to this day, on nearly every ship, you can see the white circle and the series of horizontal lines, which are called Plimsoll lines, marking the depth to which that ship can be loaded for safety. And all of this came about directly because of the mighty book that was written by the frail and sickly boy who was only 25 when he got home at last and wrote it all down. And back of these great steel vessels, there sails a ghost, the shadow of that tiny wooden sailing ship, the Pilgrim, and on its deck, the sickly boy who went out to the sea for his health and adventure and found instead a great banner of justice to carry for the rest of time in the passing parade.
Thank you, John Nesbitt.
Yankee Rose, so true, we all love you. We're proud to say you belong to the USA. Yankee Rose, we call the sweetest rose of all. Through strife and care, you're always there. That's why we'll always love you, Yankee Rose.
And misfortune's bitter winds may blow the clouds of war across the blue and red and white of freedom's glowing emblem of the brave and true.
Victor Young now has made an arrangement of the familiar and great G minor prelude by the late Sergei Rachmaninoff. Lee Sweetland sings a rousing song by Vincent Heumann, Drums in My Heart.
Bells are pealing, hearts beat madly, earth blue ceiling smiles down gladly.
No, we pray that we will stay to see the day of goodwill.
I'm your friend now, you're my brother. Hate will end now, love each other.
Love is true, love is true.
heart, I hear the drums roar. Deep in my heart, beating with joy. Cymbals I hear, way down in my soul. Reaching my ear, flashing with joy. Hail a new day, welcome a bright sky. Humbly I pray, happy am I. Drums in my heart, striking a new chord. Drums in my heart, thank the Lord.
Drums in my heart, I hear the drums roll. Deep in my heart, beating with joy. Cymbals I hear, way down in my soul. Reaching my ear, crashing with joy.
Oh, hail a new day, welcome a bright sky. Humbly I pray, happy am I.
Drums in my heart, striking
in your
heart. Rolling, rolling.
Drums in my heart, thank the Lord.
This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.